It's episode 54 of Aaron and Patricia. My name is Aaron.
My name is Patricia.
Coming up on the show today, we're going to talk to you about Amazon denying that peeing in the bottle is a thing, but AOC says otherwise. We're going to talk about Georgia Representative Park Cannon being arrested for knocking on a door. We'll tell you about that too. Boris Johnson claims that the UK government did everything it could in regards to COVID-19. I'm going to show you something otherwise. We've got some information about Kermit the Frog going into the Library of Congress National Recording Registry. Some news about Super Metroid, and also we're going to be talking about Nick Rewind's An Afternoon Well Spent. You are listening to Aaron and Patricia on the 28th of March of 2021. Patricia, do you want to tell everybody what's going on the Old School Lane podcast?
Yes, so I have posted up the Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella trilogy on YouTube, where I had that long-haired creepy guy, Igoyama 70, and Diva from Musical Hell, where we talked about the 1957 adaptation, the 1965 adaptation, and the 1997 adaptation. So if you want to listen to that, you can go to my YouTube channel and check it out. Also, we posted up the newest episode of In Search of the Crystal Skull, where we talked about Weird Al Yankovic's UHF in our month of discovering hidden gems. We have one more to post, and then we're going to be focusing on something else, but we know we're not going to get into that. And then I'm going to be doing another podcast pretty soon. And hopefully that'll be coming out tomorrow. If not, then it'll be coming out next week. So, yeah, I have a lot of things coming, and I hope that you guys look forward to what I have.
Very cool. In the meantime, we're going to be bringing you the first bit of news. Amazon posted out a tweet claiming that the peeing in the bottle is fake news.
Okay, that peeing in a bottle is fake news. Like, well,
they're implying that it's that this whole story about this is not real. So, for those of you who are not familiar with this, so Amazon workers apparently stories that we've been hearing about this in regards to like peeing and pooping in bags and bottles and things like that. Apparently, to keep themselves, employable to the company, and so that they don't take too many breaks. Apparently, the word that goes around is that workers in the Amazon factories, pee in bottles and basically poop in bags. To basically stop them from going to the bathroom, and so they can continue on basically doing their work. This apparently happens in the warehouses, and apparently it also happens in delivery drivers as well, because obviously they can't find a public bathroom, and also they don't want to miss like their quotas, if you will. So,
oh, I see.
Yeah, so apparently that's what's been going on. So Amazon, apparently this, first of all, this started off actually with Representative Mark Pocan, who is the representative of Wisconsin's 2nd District and is the co-chair of the Labor Caucus and the LGBTQ Caucus. He says, paying workers $15 an hour does not make you a quote-unquote progressive workplace when your union busts and make workers urinate in water bottles. And that was a message that Dave Clark, who I believe is the husband, father, CEO of Amazon, and also is part of the MTK NBA supply chain alumni and Red Cross Board governors, and also a Auburn football fan, according to his Twitter handle. Amazon News replied to Representative Mark Pocan and said this: you don't really believe that peeing in bottles things, do you? If that were true, nobody would work for us. The truth is that over a million incredible employees around the world who are proud of what they do and have great wages and healthcare from day one. Also, he concluded, we hope that we can enact policies to get other employees to offer what we already do. So, basically, they're denying that this happened. AOC chimed in, as she always does. And she referred to a leaked memorandum that came from a Jen Snyder, who is the on-road area manager for a DPP1, wherever that may be. And basically, it reads like this. Hello. This evening, an associate discovered human feces in an Amazon bag that was returned to station by the driver. This is the third occasion in the last 2 months when bags have been returned to stations with poop inside. We understand that DAs may have emergencies while on road, and especially during COVID. DAs have struggled to find bathrooms while delivering. Regardless, DAs cannot, must not, return bags to station with poop inside.
Wow. Like,
I'll continue on. We've noticed that an uptick recently of all kinds of unsanitary garbage being left inside bags, used masks, glove, bottles of urine. By scanning the QR code on the bag, we can easily identify the DA who was in the possession of the bag last. These behaviours are unacceptable and will result in a Tier 1 infractions going forward. I have no idea what that is. It doesn't sound good, though. Please communicate this message to our drivers. I know it may seem obvious or like something that you cannot need to coach, but please be explicit when communicating the message that they cannot poop or leave bottles of urine inside bags. The health and safety of all DAs and Amazon associates will always be our top priority. None of us should have to deal with these kinds of messes. Please respond and confirm that you have received this email.
Oh, wow. Okay, so
Amazon News is basically spreading fake news about saying that the urines and bottles and the poop bags are fake news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can hear that. And if it's been happening multiple times, they can't keep denying it anymore, especially if it happened in the course of 2 months.
There's been multiple instances of reports of all over Amazon's workplace of this stuff happening. And, you know, like, yes. They're going to be ramping this shit up because, you know, literally, or figuratively this shit up. Because, you know, Bernie Sanders recently put out another tweet recently with a video talking about the Amazon workers in Alabama.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So, tell you what, I will play this video for about 1 minute and 55 seconds. So, shall we play this and see what we think?
Okay.
Okay.
So much energy to try to defeat you is they know that if you succeed here, it will spread all over this country. And I just had a few minutes to chat with some of you about the heat.
It's too hot. Serious. It's too hot.
I get messages on my computer saying, do not touch the fan, do not turn the fan on.
Because we do have air. They're just not using it.
The fact that
That's incredible. They have, like, fans in, like, these hot environments, but they put signs up saying, do not touch the fans.
Yeah, that especially if you're working in a warehouse, and I know this because I worked in one for 5 years, and even if it's a large enclosed space, it gets really hot, especially around summertime. And so if you don't turn on the fans, you will be sweating while you're trying to stand and work upon hours and hours and hours just so that people can be able to get their stuff in time.
That when you get a 30-minute break, it takes you 10 minutes to get to the break station and 10 minutes back.
They explained to me that working in this facility, it's like a 10-hour workout.
The way that we work is meant to mentally break you down.
A man who's worth $150 billion who will not provide air conditioning, who penalizes people for being a minute late.
If you're 1 minute late, it takes a whole hour of unpaid time.
It's all right. You lose your whole hour if you're 5 minutes late or 1 minute late.
Get this right. 1 minute late, you lose an hour's pay.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. Like, I have been, when I worked at the warehouse, I was, even if I showed up a few minutes late, because, you know, I lived in Florida and it was really, really crowded with the streets. I mean, it's like one of the worst states in the United States when it comes to traffic and driving. And sometimes I would show up a few minutes late and it wouldn't be my fault, even if I would leave a few minutes early. But even if I did show up, I would be pulled over by my supervisor saying, you know, you can't keep showing up this late. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be terminated and we can easily find somebody else. So the fact that this is occurring is inexcusable.
Amazon's around the world going through the same thing.
Think about a woman having a heart attack and falling out behind you because she's so hot and tired.
There's this older woman who was stationed next to me one night. Woman had passed out.
She passed out.
She had a heart attack.
It's time for us to start.
You know, there was also a story, and I don't know if this was with an Amazon company or not, but I believe there was a woman who was working in a warehouse, and basically she went into cardiac arrest and she died. And yeah. the workers were all told not to do anything, basically work around her. So basically they were working around a dead body for you know, a good couple of hours before they basically scraped her off the floor. You know, this is how awful some employees are treated in some of these warehouses that are currently, you know, doing your online shopping with, you know?
Wow.
There's no leadership. There's no communication.
With the union coming in, I think they'll be held accountable.
The way I feel about it is that they feel like we're just a means to an end, nothing more.
If you're alone trying to stand up to Jeff Bezos and Amazon, you ain't going to get very much. But when you're together,
standing up together, you can sit down and say, you know, working conditions are not adequate. Wages are not adequate.
Birmingham, Alabama, if you pull this off here, believe me, workers all over this country are going to be saying, if these people in Alabama could take on the wealthiest guy in the world, we can do it as well.
If they succeed with this, I guarantee there's probably going to be a movie about it in 10 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, the little state that could was able to take down one of the biggest corporations of the world and the richest man in the world.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't just stop with unions. This has to go through the political spine of every country. This needs to go to our politicians. This needs to go through. By the way, you know, Bernie Sanders is a good start. But obviously, he's not, an influential politician in Alabama. You know, where the football coach in who says that he's just going to basically support Trump is, basically. So you know, I would say to everybody who's listening to this across the world, you need to get in touch with your politicians and say that this, you know, unionization of workers in this instance to get better paying conditions should be a thing. You know, because a lot of these people are being exploited. Let's call it what it is. It's exploitation.
It is.
Yeah. Urinating bottles, shitting in bags. You know? Who goes to work thinking that's going to happen to them? You know? Unfortunately, these people do.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's
absolutely
easy. It's so easy to not put yourself in. It's so easy to say, oh, well, it doesn't happen to me at work, so therefore it doesn't happen to anybody else. It's so easy. But unfortunately, it does. And, you know, if we don't push back against awful practices like this, what's to stop every other employer across, you know, across the globe doing this too, if they're not doing
exactly
it already?
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could easily be influenced by what Amazon is doing and be like, oh, well, is this how they treat their workers? And he's a billionaire. Well, I'm going to do something similar. But no, you can't do that because you see how it affects the workers. Mm. I mean, you know, take, you know, for example, you know, what happened during the, what was it, like that one company? I lost track of it. But the point is, I think that if this starts a chain of people just being fed up with Amazon treating its workers like this, and they're going to find somewhere else to get their stuff, eBay or any other website that, you know, it does the same thing that Amazon does. I mean, unfortunately, Amazon has a major monopoly when it comes to, like, you know, purchasing medicine and supplies and clothes and other things that people have been desperately needing. And if other companies are able to step up their game, then Amazon's done.
Yeah. So also, boycotts work too. You know, I'm no longer buying stuff from Amazon. So if I can avoid buying stuff from Amazon, I do. You know?
Right.
So, cool. Moving on. So did you hear about this story? So this is about Representative Park Cannon, who wanted to see basically what's going on in Georgia is there's all these bills that are going across 42 states to try and suppress voting, because obviously, you know, this is a retaliation by the Republicans because, you know, the voters in America chose wrong, Patricia. You know, they shouldn't have been allowed to, you know, legally register to vote. They shouldn't have been allowed to be handed bottles of water whilst they waited in line to vote. You know, they should have just, you know, basically just settled for the fact that, you know, a crazy fascist was in power and was basically going to eventually come after them. You know, so apparently the Republicans don't like that the people eventually made the wrong decision, so they're punishing them, and this is how they're doing it. So these laws that they're putting in there, you know, to prevent people same day registering, and to basing them on pure lies as well. You know, these Republicans just do not accept that Donald Trump lost the election legitimately. He did.
And he did.
And every single court case that went against them, out of the dozens of cases that were given across Supreme Courts all over the United States of America, only one came out. And it didn't even have a bearing on the election. And now the Republicans have decided, you know what, you know, all those crazy QAnon batshit people, yeah, let's double down on them and let's put in legislation now to suppress minority votes and also suppress votes of Democrats.
That's just why. Can't you just accept that he lost and just move on?
No, of course they can't, because this is the thing. This is a challenge to their power. You know, like, they have been so privileged and they have been so powerful this entire time. The idea that that can now be challenged in a democratic election, even though I would say that the Electoral College is not very democratic, you know, it's the fact that that's being challenged now, like, that's not acceptable for them, Patricia. And they're going to do everything they possibly can to make sure that they remain in power. And that means, you know, basically, you know, destroying democracy as we know it, if that's what it takes.
Wow.
That's what's in the minds of these nut jobs who currently wear suits and walk into the state capitol and think that, you know, they're all that. You know, and
yeah, they try trying to right a wrong, which the wrong was clearly right.
Yeah. So these laws have been described as worse than Jim Crow, which, you know, I'm sure even probably, you know, you would wonder if Jim Crow himself would probably look at these and think, nah, that's far too much. You know, and so this then led to Representative Park Cannon wanting to actually watch the bill being signed. And if you actually look at the photograph, it actually does resemble a Jim Crow bill being signed. When he was, I even tweeted it as well. So she demanded that she wanted to walk in. The police got in her way and said that she wasn't going to come in, even though she's a representative. She's a representative. She's an elected politician in Georgia. So
yes, she is.
So her, what was her crime for being arrested? Knocking on the door.
Sure it is, of course.
Yeah, so she knocked on the door. They pretty much manhandled her, basically threw her into an elevator. And this is, you know, how can America look at the rest of the world and look at authoritarian regimes and say that, hey, you shouldn't be doing that, and, you know, because... you know, and they can turn around and say, well, look what you just did to that representative. You know, you're exerting your authoritarian powers too. You know, look at all these bills that you're signing, you know, to suppress people's democratic right to vote. Like, we should... No one in the world right now, with this going on, should take a lecture from the United States of America about freedom and democracy. I'm sorry.
Wow. No.
That needs to be right before you can turn around and say everyone else is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it does. It does, because... as we've seen, that people have been trying to do right, but they're being treated wrong. And that the people who are doing wrong are saying, oh, but they're just following their American duties. And they're just, you know, expressing their freedom. It's like they're doing it in the wrong way, though.
They're doing it what they think is the right way. You know, like they are morally bankrupt, these people. They really are. We've got to stop giving them the benefit of the doubt. These people are morally bankrupt. They have no interest in, you know, your right to vote. They have no interest in doing what's right for you. They're interested in serving themselves and whoever basically pays them a penny. Those are the people they're interested in. And until some of these, you know, people start getting that, like, you know, this stuff's still going to keep going.
Yep, it's still going to keep going, and... you know, I don't think it's going to be going away anytime soon.
Well, unless people start to push back. That's what we need
people
to do.
That would be great.
Yeah, we need people to push back. And, you know, Black Votes Matter and various other organizations have been pushing back. And hopefully, you know, when they keep they're keeping this in mind. Just because they're going to make the rules a bit tighter doesn't mean that there's not, you know, still a chance for people to register and still people to get out there and actually vote. And so, I mean, people will have to bring their own bottles of water. And people will have to, you know, we'll have to queue in line for a bit longer. And get there early, too. You know? Like, you know, on top of that, there's actually going to be also people who are going to put in rules to say, oh, well, voting ends at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Which is like, this is ridiculous. Because many people work on those days.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So, basically, people are going to have to take the day off work just to vote.
Yeah, Yeah, and if the supervisor just so happens to be siding with the other side when it comes to politics, and, you know, they know that their employees will vote for the side that maybe they won't vote for, they'll refuse to give them a day off, and they'll come up with some excuse. It's like what I said before. When I used to work as a lab assistant at college, Barack Obama was going to be doing a speech at our school, And this was like around 2008 or 2000. Yeah, this was around 2008. So this is when he was first doing his presidential campaign. And I wanted to go see him, but my supervisor wouldn't let me because she was a Republican. And she refused to let anybody take some time off to go watch, you know, this Democratic president-elect, you know, this possible president, you know, to come over to our school and watch a speech. So now if there's going to be employees wanting to take some time off because voting is going to be closed down at 5 o'clock and they know that they are leaning towards one side or the other, they can refuse and they'll never have their chance to vote.
Yeah. It's going to make people choose between their livelihoods and basically their right to vote.
Yeah.
That's the way it's going to be. And, you know, I sometimes wonder, which straw is going to break the camel's back? You know, like when people are going to say, you know what, my normal life sucks right now. I'm basically going to throw it down. I'm just going to, you know, fight for my freedoms. I feel like, you know, we're going towards that at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to bring up some news here, which is so Boris Johnson claims and that his government did everything it could to fight COVID-19, even though we've had like 150,000 deaths here in the UK. I want to play this clip because I feel like it's very telling. So on one side is Boris Johnson telling everybody, oh yeah, we did everything that we could to fight off COVID-19. The other side is New Zealand, who is currently having is free of COVID and is basically living life as normal. So I thought I'd just play the two together and you can see basically how absurd our Prime Minister actually sounds.
We truly did everything we could and continue to do everything that we can to minimise loss of life and to minimise suffering in what has been a very, very difficult stage and a very, very difficult crisis for our country. And we will continue to do that.
Take it on the chin.
This country is very, very well prepared. Many more families are going to lose loved ones before their time.
Show some guts. This has been a disaster, right? Let's not mince our words. I mean, this has been an absolute nightmare for the country.
You know, New Zealand, Vietnam, South Korea, various other countries have dealt with these pandemics in the past, had it right, and this country here in the UK got it utterly, utterly wrong. And wow. The fact that they're prolonging the idea of having an independent inquiry into this is because they know they're going to get found out. That everything that they did was utterly wrong. And they can't hide behind... Do not let them hide behind the idea that they never had this before and they were all new to this and everything like that. But there was SARS. There was Ebola. There was various other pandemics. Medical emergencies that have happened around the world where they could have learned lessons from. But no, because we have British exceptionalism in this country, because we consider ourselves demigods among mortals, that they didn't think that any lessons needed to be learned from any other countries and they weren't going to be lectured to. And so basically, the first thing that we tried to do was herd immunity, which ended up, you know, killing and injuring a lot of people. And then they basically just didn't give a shit anymore. And so they didn't bother closing the borders. They didn't bother, you know, properly enforcing social distancing. They didn't even bother trying to solve some of the crises that was preventing social distancing, or even taking time off from work to even do, shielding and things like that. They utterly, utterly failed on every conceivable level. And I guarantee you, they're basically just going to have like a circle jerk about this, and they're not going to have like anyone outside, like, you know, say for example, you know, any proper experts from South Korea or Vietnam or from even from like various other countries that have just successfully contained the virus, even New Zealand themselves, and they will take the attitude that they will not be lectured to, and basically they will just not really, there'll be a whitewash inquiry and it won't do that. And that's my biggest fear about this, and we can't let them do that. You know, there needs to be a proper inquiry into this, and it needs to happen sooner rather than later. Because I guarantee, there's a possibility of, like, a third wave happening in this country. And we'll be, once again, be totally and utterly unprepared for it.
Wow. Just the fact that he claims that we did everything that we could, and we've seen, like, reports and videos saying that, you know, they lost family members because Boris Johnson was just being really, really irresponsible. It's just saddening.
By the way, well, it's all going to be distracted soon because now there's an allegation in the newspapers today that Boris Johnson cheated on his girlfriend or his wife at the time, or whatever.
Oh.
So yeah, that's wow, that's the next distraction. And you know, in normal circumstances, that will probably be a resignable offence for a prime minister. But this is a guy who has basically bottled and completely botched the coronavirus response, and now 150,000 people are dead.
Yeah.
So just, you know,
unbelievable.
Yeah. This guy should not be prime minister. He's dangerous to this country, and quite frankly, he needs to be getting rid of. We can't get rid of him until 2024, so we have to put up with him until then. But you know, it's going to be scandal after scandal, after lie, after cheat, after everything like that. He is you know, the worst prime minister that we have had so far. He really is.
Wow.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
Let's move on to some more delightful news. Kermit the Frog's Rainbow Connection is now been added to the Library of Congress, to the National Recording Registry.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Now, for those who don't know what that is, so very similar to like the Library of Congress where they preserve films, this one they preserve music. And there has been a lot of music that has been preserved over the course of many, many years. And I'm just going to read off some of the songs that have been saved. Now, it just can't be just any song. No, the very similar to like films, this one has to be preserved because of their cultural, historical, or aesthetic importance in the nation's recorded sound heritage. So yeah, it is that important of what their you know, status is and what their requirements are in order for a song to be saved. And out of all the things, it just so happens to be from the Muppet movie from the 70s of all things. And it just so happens to be Rainbow Connection, which is one of the more famous songs that had ever featured in the Muppets' history.
But, you know, Rainbow Connection, I think, is a superb addition, I think, to the National Recording Registry. It has such significant, you know, cultural, you know, presence, I think, since that song was written all the way back in 1978. You know, like it's been sang by many fans of the Muppets all the time. It's still pretty much an anthem for the Muppets today. Like if you remember, it was in the revival movie. If you recall,
yeah, it was.
Yeah, and it was still sung in Muppets Where Wanted as well. But obviously, we don't pay too much attention to that. you know, like its legacy is incredible. It's also was used in the Make a Wish Foundation as well.
Yep.
The American Film Institute labeled it the 74th greatest movie song of all time out of the 100, you know, greatest movie songs of all time. And so plenty competition for it there too, because obviously there's a lot of songs there. And also it's, you know, it's made, even when Kermit the Frog came on social media and even performed it as like, you know, just with him and his banjo, you know, I think for one of the anniversaries, and that gained like, you know, millions of hits.
It did.
So I've heard it sung at football stadiums. I've heard it, you know, in various other forms, you know, and it's still recognized as, you know, when you think of Kermit the Frog, you think of Rainbow Connection.
And co-written by Paul Williams, if you guys know, he's a very well-known songwriter and actor. You probably know him for Beneath the Planet of the Apes or Phantom of the Paradise or some of his voiceover work in Batman the Animated Series. He was the Penguin. So, yeah, I mean, he is a very talented actor and songwriter. And, you know, when you look at all of the other songs that are currently being inducted into the National Recording Registry, you have Lady Marmalade's, Lady Marmalade sung by Patti LaBelle. You have Israel Kamaka Wioweli, who sung one of the most iconic versions of Over the Rainbow from The Wizard of Oz. You have Jackson Browne's 1974 album, Lay for the Sky, Nas's 1994 album, Illmatic, and even one of Thomas Edison's recordings from 1878. Now, all of those things are being put into the, you know, the music registry, and they all deserve it in, you know, some way, shape, or form. And then you have the idea about like, wow, you know, for, you know, some people who say like, you know, why is this, you know, song that is sung by a frog for children going to be inducted into like one of the elite Hall of Fames. It's like, because it deserves it. And it doesn't even matter, you know, where the source came from. As long as it's good, it should matter that, you know, it's sung by a frog of all people.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, congratulations, I guess, is in order. I mean, if we had to say, you know, any like, you know, if I had to bring like any pros and cons or anything like that, the one thing I will say, and maybe this might be a bit cruel, I don't think anyone has ever topped the Jim Henson version of the song.
Mm.
I think Jim Henson, I think, it puts far more emotion, I think, into Rainbow Connection, I think, any of the later people who went on to do their own variations of it.
So. It's hard to top Jim Henson's performance, but each of them, I feel that they have their own unique way of singing the song. But yeah, I do agree that the original version will always be the best version.
Mm-hmm. And I think we can all say that no matter what version you say, is a lot better than the dubstep version. So.
Oh my God, no! Please,
Rainbow Connection. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so if you want to go to the National Recording Registry, you can see Rainbow Connection there, or you can just download it off Spotify. So
yeah, there you go.
It's there too. So along with the rest of the Muppets film soundtrack as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We want to give a shout out to Super Metroid on its 35th birthday, I believe.
Well, technically, it's not its 35th birthday. It's more like it's 37th, because it was released in 1994 March of 1994 in Japan, and then it was released around about a few months later in America and in Europe and various other places.
Let me just clarify this, because, you know, 34th sounds pretty old. I mean, so
it came out in 1994.
Yeah, like, which I don't think makes it 35 years. I mean, someone was tweeting saying it was 35 years old today. I don't think it is.
It's not. I think they're confusing the franchise for being 35th anniversary, and that is in a few months from now. It is not currently the Metroid series. I think the reason why is because both Zelda and Metroid are celebrating their 35th anniversary.
Okay, hang on a second. I'm just looking at this now. It's 27 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, 27 years. So it's not 35, it's 27. So, you know.
No. The 35th anniversary of Metroid won't be until August. Okay. So, yeah, we'll talk more about that when we reach
anyway,
August.
Super Metroid, I mean, it's obviously been making the circles around social media. So, correct the record, it's 27 years old. But regardless, you know, Super Metroid, for me, I mean, I really thought it was a game that was going to pass me by. And then all of a sudden, for my birthday, you know, my Nana turned up with Super Metroid. And not only that, she actually also got, like, the huge box set, which actually comes with a strategy guide as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, I got through that game pretty easily, thanks to that. So, like, don't get me wrong, some of the bosses were still hard as fuck, but, you know, like, it was such an enjoyable game. It really was.
Yeah, it's still to this day my favorite of all time. I remember, I actually wrote a whole blog article about this many years ago when I talked about a look back into Super Metroid, my favorite game of all time, and I talk about how I first got introduced to it and how... it impacted me in a very specific way when I revisited the game when I was in high school. And then over the years, when I replay it over and over again to find secrets that I didn't find before, like I don't use walking guides or strategies to like find out where to go unless I get super, super lost. Then I would use it. I had to use it for the original Metroid because, well, if you play the original Metroid on NES, everything just looks the same. So it just gets kind of confusing, which is why I have replaced it since then with Metroid Zero Mission for the Game Boy Advance, which is a way better game and much easier to navigate to as opposed to the original on NES. But no, Super Metroid. So yeah, I love everything about the game. I love the bosses. I love the atmosphere. The soundtrack's incredible. The power-ups are great. And I just love the fact that it's able to tell this interesting story without having any voice acting. And you have little story to kind of connect it with, like, the prologue and maybe some stuff inside the manual, but that was all you needed. And even for people who didn't play Metroid 1 and 2, it's very easy to get into because they recap the game in the prologue. So, yeah, I absolutely love everything about it. I mean, there are some issues with it that they would tighten up in later sequels, like the jumping and the stacking of missiles that they did with Metroid Fusion, as well as Metroid Prime 3 Corruption was a definite improvement. The jumping in Metroid Fusion was way better. And I think that when it comes to the Metroid Prime trilogy, when it comes to like their emphasis on atmosphere and soundtrack, it definitely parallels. So yeah, I absolutely love it.
I actually disagree, because out of all the Metroids that I played, I mean, Metroid Fusion, I think was fun. I think, as you know, obviously a portable kind of like handheld game and everything like that. But I don't know, like, I kind of felt like I didn't get as invested, I don't think, in Fusion, I think, as I did as in Super Metroid. You know, when I played Super Metroid, it kind of felt like a big deal, because this is a console game that has, like, you know, very in-depth, and was, you know, obviously had a massive story behind it and everything like that. Also, you know, a lot of it was kind of comic-driven as well, and, you know, you're talking to somebody who is also a fan of, you know, he's gone right on my head now, you know, Comic Zone. So something like that. So, like, you know, yeah, those like small elements in there as well. And you know, but the one thing I will say, I did find quite annoying with it. I hated the Crocomire boss. I really hated the Crocomire boss, because I didn't know that at the time that you could use charge beams to make it go backwards, and so I would always run out of missiles, and then I would just die, and then I just get frustrated, like, well, how on earth can I can't beat this boss? And then I realized later on that it's like, oh, you need the charge beam. It's like, oh, okay. So I used the charge beam, and then I beat it. So, this is my, like, you know, again, it's probably all written in the strategy guide somewhere, but I probably just missed it. So,
sure.
Yeah. But, you know, one thing I will say is that Mother Brain was quite a shock to me. Like, when, you know, when you're just dealing with the brain, and it's kind of like, and this was like again, I didn't, like, play the previous Game Boy games, but you kind of knew what you were getting yourself into, because obviously you had the pre-cut scenes before all of this, and then you had somewhat of an idea, because I read about the other Metroid games, just, you know, just in general in you know, in Nintendo magazines. But then when you get to, like, the second fight of Mother Brain, all of a sudden, like, this huge body comes up and he just puts it on his shoulders, like, motherfucker. It's like, you know, like, oh man, that took me back. You know, here's the thing about this. I'm still feel a bit sore that Sega Mega Drive, Sega Genesis kind of won that generation of the console war, because, like, you know, the Super Nintendo had so much to give. It really did. And, like, you know, when you really look at, like, the whole video game library of not just the Super Metroid, but, like, every other Super Nintendo game that was there at that time, you kind of sit there, like, you know, it must have been massively disappointing that Super Nintendo just didn't do as well as Mega Drive did.
Yeah, especially around where you were. I mean, I remember that Guru Larry made a video about how, like, the Mega Drive pretty much dominated the Super Nintendo.
Oh, you wouldn't believe, Paddy. Like, this whole, like, you know, the whole Mega, you know, everyone was talking about the Mega Drive. Channel 4 would always be very favorable to the Mega Drive. You know, the Game Master would be very favorable to the Mega Drive. You know, a lot of celebrity endorsements, and they just, it was everywhere, the Mega Drive. And, you know, you were basically, you know, a lot of us nerds at the time were basically just there playing our Super Nintendos and that. But not to say that Super Nintendo itself didn't get a liking here in the UK. You know, like, right. I mean, everyone remembers Starwing. A lot of people, Super Mario Kart was, that was so much fun at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Super Mario World too. Like, so, like, I think the problem with Super Nintendo, I think, at the time, I think third-party support, I think, was somewhat, I think, if compared to, like, the Mega Drive, where they were basically getting endorsements and third-party support wherever they could, you know, like, the EA games were obviously a big thing at the time, and there was various other games also as well that came out. I mean, now when we reflect back on it, I mean, given the fact that Super Nintendo had far more to give, I think, in regards to hardware, I think some people would look back and say, oh yeah, well, you know, the Sega Mega Drive was great at the time, but, you know, hardware and, like, physically speaking, I think the Sega Mega Drive, or the Genesis at the time, I think, was a bit inferior compared to the Super Nintendo, when you really look down at the hardware of it.
So. Yeah, I think that James Rolfe, a.k.a. Angry Video Game Nerd, did a video called Super Nintendo versus Sega Genesis. And I think that he was talking about that, oh yeah, the Super Nintendo may be the most powerful when it comes to graphics and presentation and, you know, all that stuff. But yes, the Sega Mega Drive, I mean, the whole blast processing thing, it was sort of true, in which it was a little bit faster than the Super Nintendo. But everything else, it was a little bit more inferior. So, yeah, he did bring that up. And, you know, a lot of people have still made the argument to this day about, like, oh, you know, if it's, you know, like Super Nintendo, they use a lot of Mode 7 and, you know, a lot of it can be really distracting. And, oh, but, you know, with Sega Genesis, it's like, oh, yeah, sure, you have a faster processor, but, you know, your graphics don't look anywhere near as good. So, yeah, there's still the debate about that. And I think that, you know, bottom line, I mean, you know, if you like a particular console for reasons, then you just like it. I mean, if you want to listen to more about our memories of the Sega Genesis, we did one actually a few years ago where myself, Aaron, and Tom, we talked about our Sega Genesis memories. And I can assure you that we will do one on our Super Nintendo memories in the future whenever that the, what was it like? I'm trying to find out when is the 30th anniversary of it is for America, because we missed the Japanese anniversary. I was still doing like something for Thanksgiving. I remember it was the Swan Princess podcast. I wanted to release that for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I'm looking it up now,
release date for Super Nintendo was in Japan, it was November 21st 1990, so just before Christmas. And in the UK we got it 2 years later in 1992.
Yeah, and as for us, we got it on August 13th. So, you know what? We'll talk about the Super Nintendo around August.
Oh, I want to be involved in that. Like, during my childhood, Super Nintendo was my life. Like, I've got loads of games in the back I really want to talk about.
Yeah. All right, so I'll tell you what, we will, leave this as a part two for August when Aaron and I, we will talk about it in a future episode of Casual Chats.
Oh, I would really love that. That would be really cool. Okay. I'm going to be honest with you. There is, I'm trying to find the tweet that we're going to talk about this for, which is an afternoon well spent. And I just tried to search for it. And let me just say, there's a lot of people who have very differing interpretations of how they like a well afternoon well spent. So I'm just trying to find it at the moment. So I do apologize, everybody. But, while I'm trying to find it, and the reason I wanted to kind of bring this up is because Nick Rewind put out a tweet with basically like a bingo card.
I have it right here. I'm going to send it over to you.
Yeah, so basically it's an afternoon well spent. And so there's many shows on here which I thought, you know, this would be good, I think, for a long-winded conversation about this. So...
Okay.
So what we'll do is, I mean, we're not going to, like, play bingo, if you will. Like, I thought maybe we could just go, like, through all the shows and, like, just think, you know, would this have basically made our afternoon or not? So, So I think there's actually some pretty good shows on here, so maybe this might end up being a very boring conversation, but we'll see how it all pans out. So here we go. All right, then. So I'm going to go from right to left at the top. So the first one on here is the Royal Thornberrys.
Okay, the Wild Thornberrys. Now, I know a lot of people have heard my opinions about the Wild Thornberrys, where I find the show to be pretty problematic. It can be a little bit dull at points. There's some of the characters that I don't really care about. I mean, the only reason why a lot of people still remember the show is because Tim Curry as Nigel Thornberry was so enjoyable.
But Patricia, Nigel Thornberry. Like?
Yeah, but it's Tim Curry. You can see Tim Curry in so many other things.
Yeah. Right now, actually, I'll tell you what, I'm actually looking at this there's a website called whattowatch.tv, and it gives like an average rating of like all the episodes are rated on IMDb. So this currently has an average rating of 6.85 out of 10.
Yeah, that sounds just about right, because I know a lot of people who love this show, and I know a lot of people who hate this show. And I'm one of those people who just find it, like, it has its moments. But it's not one of the best Klasky Csupo Nicktoons that had ever came out.
Like, there's only like really two good episodes, according to everybody. Like, there's The Origin of Donnie and Look Who's Squawking.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Whenever they talk about The Origin of Donnie, they just talk about like the last 10 minutes of the movie. They don't talk about anything else. They don't talk about the story about when Debbie and her grandmother accidentally get themselves lost and wander into the village. They don't talk about Marianne and Nigel trying to film the orangutans. They don't talk about Eliza and Darwin finding a baby orangutan who got lost and is trying to find its mother. They don't talk about any of those. They just talk about the last 10 minutes and say, oh yeah, I remember that movie. It's, you know, the one where Donnie, we find out about where Donnie's parents are and that they were killed by poachers. It's like, yeah, but that was like the last 10 minutes. What about the rest of it? And nobody can recall on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so not our idea of a good afternoon.
Don't worry. We will talk about something regarding about the Wild Thornberrys in something, but we're not going to say it.
Okay. Next one is Keenan and Kel.
Okay, so yeah, Keenan and Kel. I talked about this on the SNCC podcast a few years ago, and I do enjoy Keenan and Kel. I mean, Keenan and Kel just has this really great chemistry, and they always interact with each other. Keenan being the straight man and Kel being like the goofy side character who's obsessed with orange soda. I find that my issue with Keenan and Kel is that Keenan and Kel are so good that the other characters suffer. And I felt the same way when I talked about The Mask and Mrs. Doubtfire, in which, like, it is true that Jim Carrey was fantastic in The Mask, and it is true that Robin Williams was great in Mrs. Doubtfire, but all the other actors suffered, and they were just, like, second note. And I feel the same way about Keenan and Kel.
Yeah. My views on Keenan and Kel, great show, I think, and I mean, obviously, I know you say that all the other characters suffer, but I mean, like, the main attraction basically was Keenan and Kel, I think.
I know it is.
And also, you got the celebrity guests all kind of being thrown in there as well, which obviously were a bit of distraction. Didn't, like, the director of, like, the show also put herself in there, too? I think
like, in one episode or
something.
She was
like, what was her name? Miss Horn or something like that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, and a lot of people do the wrong consensus. This show was not created by Dan Schneider. A lot of people always say that. It's not created by Dan Schneider.
No, it definitely wasn't.
It was created by Kim Bass, who created Sister Sister.
Mm-hmm. So the best episodes in this is obviously The Tainting of the Screw, which obviously, you know,
yep,
I dropped the
screw. That is a fan favorite.
Three Girls, mm-hmm. A Guy in a Cineplex.
Mm-hmm. That's another favorite one.
And also part one and part two of Bye Bye Keenan.
Yep, and that is another famous episode that a lot of people remember as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next one is Legends of Hidden Temple. I mean, like, I don't think any more needs to be said there. I think, yeah, definitely a good afternoon. I think.
Definitely, in my opinion, it was the best Nickelodeon game show of the 90s. I know a lot of people say Guts was. I know a lot of people say Figure It Out was. But no, I'm sorry. Legends of the Hidden Temple was the best game show in the 90s. It is up par with Double Dare.
Okay.
We better
rush through, like, all these other ones because we're going to slowly run out of time in a minute.
Okay, fair enough.
Basically, let's give a brief overview and then we'll do that. So, I know. I tell you what, actually, everybody, if we get a chance to do, maybe we could probably do this for a casual chats, maybe? Like, we'll have a look for all this bingo card and maybe just talk about all the shows in depth, maybe?
And, sure, why not? Let's do that. But yeah, I did a podcast on it many years ago. Don't listen to it. It's awful because the audio sucks.
Okay,
but,
let's do it again.
Yeah,
let's do it again.
I'm going to do it again at some point.
Yeah, I'll get involved if you want.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Cool, okay. Next one is Rugrats. I mean, I would say half the... or maybe all the way up to season four, but then after that, probably no. You know, like, the first four seasons, I'll probably say, yeah, definitely do it, but, you know, the other ones just stay away.
I am doing my rewatch of Rugrats with Rugrats View from the Crib, and I'm currently editing ZL and I's discussion of season three, so we haven't gotten to season four yet, so... I'm not going to say too much about, you know, that in terms of, like, in depth, but I'm just going to say that, yeah, it's a great show for its first few seasons. Then it got a little stale after a while, especially with the new writers and the new people running it. And it just didn't feel the same afterwards. And then the character additions, it's like, oh man, this is a classic example of, like, adding characters in to make a series, preventing it from being stale, and it's just, like, it was just not necessary.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Just when you thought The Great Gazoo was probably, like, the worst addition to a TV show, here comes Dill. You know, like,
let's just move on.
Okay. Next one is Rocket Power. I've got to say no.
No, I mean, Rocket Power was good for the time. It came out at the right place at the right time. It came out at the height of Tony Hawk and the X Games and him doing the 900 for the first time. It came out roughly around the same time when Tony Hawk Pro Skater came out. So it was definitely enriched in the skater culture. But looking at it today, oof, it's rough.
I would argue it probably should have been a Nickelodeon movie. And then after that, they should have thought, well, let's see how this flies. And then after that, we'll do a TV series. You know, like, because, like, the only good episode, according to this, apparently is only, like, the first episode, which kind of makes me feel like, you know, they've always just, like, you know, the rest of them are just average, according to this. So, like, I would have said, you know, maybe do, like, a TV special, and then if that flies, then probably do a TV series after that. You know, I don't know. That was just the way I felt about it. Oh, by the way, keep this in mind. Like, all the promotional material they tried to do, it flopped massively. Like, do you remember the skating show that they tried to do for it? And, like, it did three shows and then got cancelled after that?
Like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Just, you know what? I mean, I could see the appeal of incorporating a Rocket Power-esque skateboarding show, because they tried to do that in 1990 with Skate TV, and that didn't work out very well. And so they thought, hey, you know, Rocket Power has mass appeal. Let's do it again. And nope, it didn't work out either.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next one is Are You Afraid of the Dark? Pretty much, yeah. That would definitely make my afternoon, I think.
Agree to that to an extent. I would say it would make my evening, because Are You Afraid of the Dark is a much better show to watch
actually,
it at night.
Actually, I will agree with you on that, because I remember when we had the Monster Madness block, and we had our real monsters, Are You Afraid of the Dark, and we had Tales from the Crypt Keeper, and that was basically the Nickelodeon Monster Madness evening that used to go on. And so I think I would agree with you. I think probably that would be better. I would say if you were going to watch it, I mean, you're probably safe between like seasons 1 to 5, but the latest, I would say 6 and 7, things like it's going to go a bit stale.
Yeah, the reason why is because that's when they did the cast change. A lot of the actors grew too old, and so they only brought back the little brother as the leader and his friend, and it just wasn't the same afterwards.
Yeah. I kind of refer to it as like, you know, Are You Afraid of the Dark, the new class?
I mean, I understand where they're coming from. I mean, you know, Goosebumps was really starting to get popular in Canada and the U.S., and so they decided to bring it back after years of being off the air. And so, you know, I mean, it was commendable that they tried to bring in, like, a new generation, and they tried to bring in these new stories, but none of them are very memorable. The only one that I do remember was The Tale of the Silver Side. And the reason why is because it was a 3-part episode. It actually happened. It wasn't just a story that they told. And they brought back Gary, the original leader. And this would be like a predecessor to like the Are You Afraid of the Dark miniseries that would come out over 20 years later.
Yeah, wasn't this coming at the time like, because didn't Scooby-Doo and Zombie Island come around about that time? I think that movie came out.
Right, it came out around that, like, a few years later, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, no longer goofy costumes and stories. Yeah, this is real people. Like, this is where it was mm-hmm. evolving to. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Next show is Hey Arnold. I mean, that definitely makes my... I have bias towards Hey Arnold, so of course it's going to make my afternoon. You know?
It's going to make my afternoon as well.
Yeah, it's like, it was our first drama, pretty much. You know, like, with a bit of comedy kind of mixed in. So, mm-hmm. yeah. The next one is The Angry Beavers.
Yeah, I would say yes, that would definitely make my afternoon. I would say seasons 2 through 3 would be my favorite seasons of Angry Beavers. Season 4 has its moments, and season 5, no. And as for season 1, I know it's the classic season, but I felt that the humor didn't really develop until season 2. I did a top 10 list about it many years ago.
So you know what? I know we go about I know we talk about the subject all the time every time we bring up the Angry Beavers, but you know, recently we've had like the reanimated episode of like the last episode of Dungeons and Dragons. Like, I really want someone out there to do a fan animation of like the last episode of The Angry Beavers.
I would love that.
I'd love that so much. And it would be pretty easy to do. It's basically just say then to trying to convince themselves they're in a cartoon. You know, like, I'm sure they do a modern twist on that. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I'm surprised that nobody has done it. Like, animators out there, if you're fans of Angry Beavers, you have, like, this audio, which has the potential of being something great, go out there and do it.
Yeah, like, you know, like, guys, like, you know, go out and do it. Like, it's not like, you know, you look at, I mean, it's not like, you know, that you could get up and, like, get a cease and desist like Nintendo do. Wink, wink.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, next one is Rocko's Modern Life. Definitely, I would say that would make my afternoon.
Me too. I love that show.
There isn't a bad episode. Like,
no, it's one of the most consistent Nicktoons out there, where every episode there's always something good, and it ran with the right amount of time, and it has some of the best episodes ever, and it took so many risks. I had Joe Murray on my podcast many years ago where we talked about the show and Static Cling, so yeah, you can go check that out. But yeah, I just absolutely love this show. It's funny, and it has a lot of jokes that fly over your head when you're a kid, and I will say this, that it's in my top 5 when it comes to Nicktoons. I think it's even better than Ren and Stimpy.
Mm-hmm. Next one is Real Monsters.
Again, very similar to Are You Afraid of the Dark, I would argue that it would be better to watch it at night.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next one is Doug. Really, Doug's a mixed bag for me. Like there's some good episodes, but would I, like, you know, watch the whole thing the whole way through? I'm not too sure.
It would be very hard to do, considering that I know that when it comes to like what Doug did, I mean, Doug was a revolutionary at the time. It was the one that really popularized the slice of life cartoons that we would get in the 90s and then the 2000s. But yeah, it hasn't aged very well. And that's not to say that you can't go back and watch it and enjoy it, but it's still kind of hard to say that you would watch Doug over something like Hey Arnold.
Yeah. Next one is Double Dare.
Oh, absolutely, yes. I would definitely say that Double Dare would be great to watch during the afternoon. I mean, you know, I wouldn't watch it like, you know, in succession. I mean, depending on which Double Dare, because there's the original Double Dare, there's Super Sloppy Double Dare, there's Family Double Dare, there's Double Dare 2000, and then there's the Double Dare that came, the revival of Double Dare that came out a few years ago.
Is that Diet Double Dare?
I would argue that's Double Dare 2000. I think that
caffeine-free Double Dare.
There you go, caffeine-free Double Dare. I would argue that the revival of Double Dare with Lisa Koshy, it does definitely keep the spirit of the original Double Dare. I mean, they even have Mark Summers as the co-host, so it's like, hey, that's perfect. And I think that they were able to implement not only some of the classic stuff, but they were able to add in some new challenges as well. And Double Dare 2000 tried to do the same thing, but just it didn't really pull it off as good. And I think that with each incarnation of Double Dare, like I would say, like, you know, watch maybe some classic Double Dare, then some Super Sloppy, then some Family. I think Family is the one that a lot of people remember the most. And I think that if you want to watch Double Dare 2000, it's fine. I mean, it's not like the worst of the revived game shows. Oh no, Wild and Crazy Kids, I would argue, is even worse than that. Or even My Family's Got Guts is even worse than that. But no, I mean, it's a fine show. It just couldn't live up to the legacy of the original. Until, of course, the one that came out a few years ago kind of did.
Mm-hmm. Next one is Ren and Stimpy. I mean, obviously that would make your afternoon.
Sure, I would say like maybe the first 2 to 3 seasons, but then seasons 4 and 5 are a little bit rough. I mean, not to say that there aren't any good episodes in those later seasons, but just nowhere near the quality of the earlier seasons.
Yeah, and I mean, tell you what, there is a kind of a segue I kind of want to go to this as well. Like, do you know there was that news that SpongeBob SquarePants has had some episodes removed from Paramount Plus?
Yes, because I have heard about that.
You know, like, but then I look at the content of those episodes and I'm like, you know, I can kind of understand, given the fact that they're going to 6 to 11 demographic, I can kind of understand why they've removed some, like, more, I would say, adult, SpongeBob SquarePants episodes. I mean, don't get me wrong, you can still get them on DVD. I mean, like, they're still obtainable, but, I mean, like, you know, obviously Ren and Stimpy had, like, your adult party cartoon, so they're, like, the adult version of Ren and Stimpy. I mean, I would argue if SpongeBob SquarePants had, like, an adult party cartoon version of the show where, like, this stuff would kind of, like, you know, somewhat be acceptable, like, you know, for the 18 to 34 demographic, I mean, I would kind of understand, yeah, that's kind of, like, you know, you shouldn't really censor that kind of stuff because it still is kind of funny. Like, keep in mind, like, you know, Mr. Krabs was stealing, like, you know, his mother's underpants, you know, like, there was kind of that. But if this was, like, you know, given that this is 6 to 11 demographic, I kind of understand why they've taken them off, you know. Like, it's the Dr. Seuss books all over again, pretty much. Like, this stuff just isn't acceptable now in today's TV. You know,
yeah. So and for people who are saying, oh, you know, why did they remove it? It's one of the funniest episodes. And sure, but I think that for today's kids, it's like if they see a panty raid from SpongeBob, Patrick, and Mr. Krabs, then yeah, it's like it would be a little too adult for them. But I mean, like Aaron said, I mean, you could just always get it on DVD, so it's, you know, it's still available.
Again, like, this isn't like, if there's like an adult version of SpongeBob SquarePants, I kind of would see people's point, but this isn't. It just isn't. Like, you know, Nickelodeon picked their audience, and this is who they're going for. Okay?
Yep.
It's not you. So, okay. Next one is The Adventures of Pete and Pete. I'll be honest with you, I didn't really warm up to Pete and Pete that much. I mean, like,
I would say that when I first saw it, I didn't warm up to it either. It wasn't until I was in college that I really appreciated Pete and Pete. I appreciated its smart yet its strange persona and its amazing soundtrack and its life lessons and its quirky characters. I love the show. It's my favorite live action Nickelodeon show of all time. So, yes, I would say that a great afternoon of Pete and Pete will be great. At least the first 2 seasons. Season 3, when Artie left, it has its moments, but yeah, the first 2 seasons are still the best.
Mm-hmm. Next one is The Amanda Show. I gotta say no. I think it's, I don't know. I just think it's, I don't know. Like, it seems a bit dated for me at this point, I think.
I can see that, yeah.
Next one is As Told by Ginger. Oh, well, we've got to say yes to this one, surely.
Oh, I have to. Otherwise, people will be like, Patricia, why didn't you say yes to this? It's like, of course I am. I mean, I've seen the show like 5 or 6 times. I know a lot of things about it, even some things that probably a lot of people don't even know about. So, yes, I mean, I would love to have an afternoon just watching
As Told by Ginger. Oh, by the way, back on CBS All Access. So, you know, get streaming, you know.
Oh, Paramount Plus is what it's called now.
Oh, so, Paramount Plus, yes. Sorry. Yeah, I don't know why I keep calling it that. But, okay.
Yeah, I probably would. I mean, I'm not going to update my video that I said CBS All Access because, I mean, when I was released, it was CBS All Access. So, yeah, it's Paramount Plus now, and it's all there, so go watch it.
Okay. Next one is Kablam. Here's the thing about this. Like, some segments I actually did like, and at the one point Nickelodeon in the UK, they actually took the segments and actually made them their own shows. They basically just kind of like did like you know, marathons of like, you know, the Kablam skits, if you will. They didn't like, you know, so Action League Now I think was definitely a popular one, but they didn't really like, I mean, like the Offbeats, I don't know, if I didn't think it was all, I didn't think it catched on all that well. But I mean, some segments were okay, but other ones were just kind of flat, really.
Yeah, and this is a thing that I've even talked about where you have the variety shows in which, yeah, I mean, they were very experimental in terms of like, we're just going to throw in these shorts and see which one of them has potential to be a TV series. And, you know, that kind of format that they did later on with like What a Cartoon, Oh Yeah Cartoons and Random Cartoons, it didn't really, you know, age very well. I mean, a lot of the stuff that you can easily see online, and a lot of people nowadays, they just watch the standalone shorts as opposed to like watching the entire thing through. So Kablam has its fair share of good shorts. I mean, they have Citizen Fondue, Action League Now, Prometheus and Bob, Life with Loopy, The Offbeats, and then they have like little shorts here and there that show up from time to time. They have music videos from They Might Be Giants, but yeah, as a consistent show. I mean, you know, I talked about this when I used to be a admin of the Nickelodeon Slamcast podcast, that Kablam tried to have at least 5 spinoffs and none of them caught on. The only one that did eventually become a spinoff for Nickelodeon was Action League Now, but they just replayed the same shorts that they did in Kablam. And then there was Angela Anaconda. We don't talk about Angela Anaconda.
We do not know. We don't mention that on this show. Shame on
you. Nope.
No.
I know. I'm awful.
Okay. I'll admit something that's really, really, I think some people might find quite crazy to believe, but you know the hosts of Kablam were Henry and June? You know, like...
Yeah, and they tried to do a spin-off series on Henry and June that only lasted for like one episode, yeah, and it only aired like once.
I might be embarrassed to think about it, but I thought June was actually Jude, and I thought June was actually a boy. You know, like, you know, like, I remember when, like, so, you know, when they did, like, the whole reward ceremony and, like, did, like, all these, like, skits where, like, you know, they were, like, all dressed up and, like, you know, June was, like, wearing a dress. I thought they were just doing that for comedic value, you know, like, and I thought, right. Oh, and then someone said, oh, no, June is a girl. It's like, really? It's like, oh, whoops.
So. Yeah, it's like when people find out that Blue from Blue's Clues was a girl. It's like, wait, what? Yeah, yeah. Apparently.
Okay, next one is Figure It Out.
I have issues with Figure It
I've
Out.
Never watched the show, so I can't comment.
Okay, so for those who don't know, Figure It Out was a game show hosted by Summer Sanders, and it features like everyday kids, and they have unique talents. And there would be a group of panels, which consisted of Nickelodeon celebrities at the time, and they would try to guess what the panel is, and they would have like clues that they would, you know, get that they would be able to guess it. And if the panelists are able to guess it right before 3 rounds, then they win. But if the contestant is able to stump them, then he wins and he gets a prize, and then he would show off his talent. And some of the talents were really, really good, but then others were just really dumb. I did a top 15 video on like the worst talents that ever featured on Figure It Out. And I even said this in a podcast a long time ago, and I still agree. The revival of Figure It Out is way better. I'm sorry, a lot of people, but it is. The host is better. The presentation is better. The talents are better. Everything about it is better. The only thing that sucks are the panelists, because they utilize the panelists that were around like the 2000s and 2010s. So it doesn't have the same nostalgic connection to me personally. So that's the only thing that holds it back. But everything else is just better. I'm sorry. I know it's an unpopular opinion, but that's what I believe.
Well, I'll take your word for it. So don't worry about that. Okay. Next one is Guts.
Oh yes, Guts is a great show. I love Guts. It was basically American Gladiators for kids.
Yeah, mind you, I don't think the problem is that I don't think Guts would have taken off in the UK because we basically had like Junior Glad. Well, I think it was Junior Gladiators. I think we had at the time. So like we had our own kid version of the show that was weirdly enough hosted by like ex Man United footballer Lee Sharp, like who had no like involvement with Gladiators. Which is so strange. You know, like, yeah. Next one is CatDog.
No.
I couldn't really get into CatDog, so yeah, I don't think I would either. So
CatDog has his problems. Like, everything that CatDog did, Ren and Stimpy, Rocco, and Angry Beavers, and then later on SpongeBob did way better. The characters, I feel, are just a little bit too mean-spirited for my taste. The plots were just not memorable. Just everything about it was just so forgettable. Like, even with their holiday specials, you would think, oh, man, the holiday specials is where these are going to stand out. And nothing. Like, nothing about this show really stood out to me personally. So I would say no.
Mm-hmm. Next one is Danny Phantom. Oh, obviously.
I think it's, yeah, I would say the first...
phenomenon. Like, I was so sad when it got canceled. You know, like...
Yeah, and I was sad when... people who worked on Danny Phantom that, you know, were hugely influential, such as Steve Marmol, who was a major writer for Fairly Odd Parents and Danny Phantom. He left after season two, and then season three suffered. And, you know, then Nickelodeon decided to cancel the show. And then, Butch Hartman had to rush everything until we got to the finale with Phantom Planet. So, yeah, I would say first two seasons, excellent. Third season is a bit rough.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, some people seem to like third season, so...
I guess that's true.
Yeah, okay. Next one is All That. I mean, obviously, All That was, like, it kicked off so much of, like, you know, the careers of many people. So, like, it's the primordial ooze of, like, some of these people, pretty much. Yeah,
it was, and a lot of people argue about, like, which version of All That was the better one. I mean, people argue about, like, okay, we had seasons 1 through 6, where you have the classic All That. Then season 7 through 10, where you have the revival of All That that came out around, 2002, 2003. And then finally, you have the remake of All That. They just came out a few years ago, where it has like the new cast and they have like new skits. So yeah, I think that depending on which All That you prefer, each of them have their own strengths, but unfortunately a lot of them have their own weaknesses.
Mm. Isn't like the ones that they've posted up recently, like they've had to take like all these celebrity appearances out of it, and like all the music videos and stuff?
Copyright claims, which is unfortunate.
I mean, doesn't it just kind of sound like they appeared on the show? Like, why is it, I mean, do they still have to like pay a license fee every time like they show them or something?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Like, that's the reason why season 3 of Pete and Pete never got released on DVD, because of the licensing fee of all the music that they featured. And that's why Kablam has never been released on DVD, because They Might Be Giants performed, and a lot of the songs that were featured in the show, like the opening theme song of Kablam, is a song from Two Tone Army. So, yeah, like, you know, there's a lot of copyright claims and there's a lot of licensing fees that they have to pull up. It's like, it's stupidly complicated.
But in like, I mean, I don't know if All Grown Up is on Paramount Plus yet, but I mean, like, what are they going to do with the Smash Mouth episode in that show?
Like, they probably will remove it, similar to how in the Chalk Zone episode, they had to remove the Baja Men episode from DVD.
Yeah. And finally, Arcade.
Nickelodeon Arcade. Nick Arcade is... Okay, I did a podcast on Nick Arcade a few years ago with Bilal Smith. I even did a video on Pilot to Final Product on it, and it was a show that was definitely of its time, very similar to Rocket Power. It was a time in which when, you know, video game iconography was still kind of new. You know, we had, you know, the release of the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis, and this was like the, you know, pretty much like the rebirth of video game pop culture. And just watching it now, like, you know, it has its moments, but, you know, watching the kids suck at playing the video games when it's so obvious now, and also with you know, the issues with like watching like the video zone, and, you know, them kind of like sucking at it as well, and it's a bit hard to watch nowadays. That's not to say...
It's also that as well, like, I don't think they could ever bring that something like that back, because now that we have esports now, like, you know, like, you know, can you imagine, like, if they did bring back, like, their own, like, version of arcade? Like, I guarantee you, like, most of the teams from, like, South Korea and Japan would just dominate those types of shows. I could probably imagine.
They tried to bring back Nick Arcade on Kickstarter 2 times, and they both failed.
Yeah, exactly. So I think because you know, like it's a saturated product, pretty much. Like you know, Nintendo, you know, proposed COVID, you know, pre-COVID. I mean, like they were doing all like the Splatoon tournaments and everything like that at like you know Comic Cons. And things like that, like, you know, just, it's, there's the esports as well, like, you know, it's just, it's a format that's been done to death. Like, it was a unique concept back in the 90s, but I don't think it would be a unique concept now.
No, you'll have to really change it up in order for it to be unique.
Yeah, so, and that doesn't mean just sliming them every time they lose something, you know?
Like, well, Nick Arcade never slimed anybody to begin with.
Exactly, like, I was just saying, you know, like, just in case he decides to get, well, you know, with the kids, it works for the Kids' Choice Awards, you know, like, I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, everybody. That's all we got for this week. Unfortunately, we have to cut it a bit short because we don't get as much time, I think. The problem is that we seem to go overboard on like some of our other episodes because we just get like, caught in like you know all sorts of conversations and we never keep to time. So, unfortunately, this episode ends up being short because of it. So, anyway, we'll be back to normal next week. So, thanks, everybody, for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
See you later.